We didn't we want to put up a document which is a comparison of some of the paragraphs in the KPMG and the Sikakani report versus some of the paragraphs in the PP's report to show the committee some similarities. And what I propose doing is, Shepo, just put it up on the screen, the comparison document. Right? It looks like this. And what I'm going to do is the second column deals with the KPMG report, and the first column is what is in the PP's report. So I'm going to ask Shepo to put up on the screen to paragraph 5 to 11 of the PP's report. And I will have on my screen the document that we've just shown you, and I'll read from there. So this is 5.2.11 from page PDF page 9. It's got the case lines reference to it. So I'm going to use it at page 892. KPMG report says, for various reasons, the intended mechanism and the relationship did not materialize as intended with developing its own capability caused by lack of trust and cooperation between the entities. I'm reading from the KPMG report. And so what you can see on the screen is a similar paragraph to what's in the KPMG report. Chair, would it be easier if I put the two up on the screen together so that that can be seen? Would that be an easier exercise? Because it seems a bit more difficult to do it that way.
That's probably better.
And if I've misrepresented the paragraph in the PP's report, it could be easily...
Just as you are doing that, Honorable Heron, I see your hand.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to get clarity that the document that Advocate Bowers prepared with the two columns, that document has been shared with us or will be shared with us as well.
Good point, Advocate Bauer. Can you just quickly respond to that?
Chair, it will be shared.
Okay. Thank you. We will share that, Honorable Aaron, with everybody.
In doing this exercise, it will also show me if my page references is correct, because this wasn't initially prepared. It was initially prepared for purposes of asking questions, et cetera.
Okay.
So I've done that.
Thank you.
Have you split screen and then shared it? Can you do it as a horizontal split shape? Then it won't reduce in size.
Glass, take it to glass.
First horizontal split it and then shared. Okay, Chair, we're not going to be able to do it in that way. So let's put up on the screen this PP's report. I will indicate clearly which paragraph is on the screen, and I will then read from the KPMG report.
It's okay. So I get that to be a difficulty here on the screen, but as you share the document, to everybody, will it be able to be done in that way?
Will you prefer me sharing the document that's got both versions on it?
Yes.
Okay, so put that version. Put that version.
I thought that's also what the member also wanted to check, if the availability of it.
Right. So take the first one. In doing that, what? Let me just open the. I just want to have it on. What page was it? 24. So in some cases, there's a similarity in wording, and in other cases, it's more exacting than that, but the sense is the same. Right. So the first paragraph we referred to was 5.211 of the report, and that fits under the heading which we see in the report that says memorandum requesting funding of an intelligence unit, and it's in the section of the report that says SARS response, and it's summarized there. So the heading says, for various reasons, the intended, I'm going to read the KPMG report and the committee can follow the PP's report. For various reasons, the intended mechanism and relationship did not materialize as intended, and SARS continued with developing its own capability caused by lack of trust and cooperation between the entities. Go down. Purpose of the submission, and we now at 5.2.12, the purpose of the submission was to obtain approval from the Minister of Intelligence, which at the time was Mr. Ronnie Castles, for the establishment of a deep COVID capability enabling the NIA and SARS to jointly embark on the COVID collection and surveillance of strategic priorities relating to border intelligence. The capability was to be staffed with highly trained specialists focusing on agreed priorities within the area of anti-smuggling, and would provide the ability for SARS and the NIA to carry out their respective mandates. It was stated that in order to have such a dedicated capability, that would be necessary to form a unit to be staffed with SARS personnel under the command and employment of the NIA. So on the left column is the PP's report. On the right column, I'm reading from the KPMG report. So the next paragraph is 5.2.35.6. And that is under the heading that says KPMG report, right? And the KPMG report says, each time when the name of the unit changed, it was marked by an event which resulted or possibly could have resulted in damaging of especially the reputation of SARS. Pattern developed around the name change, just being it was either internally announced that the unit was disbanded or externally in those instances where the media was aware and individuals departed under suspicious circumstances with financial settlements, and the justification being in the interest of SARS, where after it continued functioning under different guise and name, right? So the next paragraph you'll see is also attributed to KPMG under that heading. And it says, the possibility exists that the interception Van Loggenburg referred to in his WhatsApp communication with Walters may also include third-party interceptions on his behalf. The same applies to the mystery of unexplained instances of emails appearing on his allocated laptop in which he was not a recipient. These emails correspondence clearly belong to other parties. And then 5.5.5 was under the heading issues in dispute, information regarding the recordings of Mr. Andries Petrus Jansen van Rensburg and Mr. van Rensburg. And it reads in the KPMG version, the installation was allegedly instigated by NAL and LISC, and the purpose was to provide the ability to NAL and LISC to monitor activities and discussions occurring in certain offices and general office space in the DSO and NPA. The office and office space selected and identified at least included that of NAL LISC, Ngungwinga, Pikoli, and a boardroom where meetings took place. The concern was that information may or may not be disappearing from the offices, and SAPS were suspected as the culprits. Right, so that's a more general statement that comes out. Then if you go to 5.5.7, the equipment was installed in July 2007 and monitoring activities continued. The installation provided off-site access to the recordings for NAL and LISC and also Lombard, who claimed to have been responsible for the maintenance thereof. And then at 5.5.8, there's the account of the phone call from Mr. Pillay. Soon after the installations were completed, it is alleged that Pillay requested Jansen van Rensburg to provide him with records and reports on the discussions that took place, and it is claimed that NAL and LISC were allegedly not aware of the request. The request came as Pillay was aware that Lombard also had access to the recordings. Pillay allegedly indicated that the request was authorized at higher levels. And Jansen van Rensburg claims that he believed the information was needed for the president. Recordings, there was a consistent primary of discussions about the Celebi and Agliotti investigations. Then 5.5.36, which falls under the category of the conclusion. The unit was established by Pillay at the time when Gordhan was commissioner of SARS. Here, the KPMG report said, we found no evidence that Gordhan was informed about the existence of the unit. However, considering his position as accounting officer, it is reasonable to expect that he ought to have known of the existence of the unit. The phraseology in the PP's report is, it is highly unfeasible that the unit's officials operated the unit in isolation of their principals. Right? Then we come to the Sikakani report. Just skip the first column. That's just the background to the Sikakani report. Right? Go down. Right? So if you go to Shepa, you must go to I'm going to have to read the Sikakani report to you, and then you go to 5.2.17 of the report. Yeah. So you must go to 5.2.17. Just go down. Right. Mr. Pillay introduced Mr. Van Lagenberg to the Commission of SARS, Mr. Praveen Godan. Right. Go down. The current Minister of Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs. Right. Mr. Van Lagenberg testified that Mr. Godan told him that he sought to develop intelligence capacity in SARS within the context of tax and customs. And then the next paragraph would be 5.2.18, right? Which would be paragraph 43 of the Sekakane report. And it reads, there's a bit of a text and the relevant part says, during this meeting, Mr. Pillay explained how SARS sought to increase its capacity to investigate organized crime and illicit trading and the impact thereof on the tax and customs mandate of SARS. And then it's linked to the next paragraph. It says, during 2004-2005, SARS set up study groups to understand the illicit economy and how it functioned. SARS also began official interactions with the South African Police Service, Military Defense, and NIA. It had previously done something similar with the National Prosecuting Authority, which resulted in the creation of special tax units. The plan was that the unit would be housed within NIA, which dealt specifically with SARS tax and customs intelligence related issues. The next one would be 5.2.19. So I'm going to, we have 5.2.20. In line with this plan, SARS, through its highest office, approved the creation of a group which was known by different names, including the Tiger Group, Special Projects Unit, the NRG, and later the High Risk Investigation Unit. As explained in greater detail below, the unit was staffed with members who came primarily from the intelligence structures with skills to conduct surveillance, investigate, and monitor those involved in the illicit economy. That's 43.4 of the Sekakane report. The next one would be 43.5 and 43.5 and 6. And it would read, SARS, SARS therefore found itself in the position Just let me double check. I don't make a mistake. I've already read part of it out. Right. Okay. 5.2.22. On 12 February 2007. The then Commission of SARS, Mr. Godan, addressed a memorandum to the then Minister of Finance, Mr. Trevor Manuel, seeking approval for funding of intelligence capability within NIA in support of SARS. Copy of the memorandum is attached. Right? And then it goes further. And it says, it is clear, I think you must go down. Right? It is clear, ex facie, this memorandum that SARS sought to establish within the NIA, a unit for the collection of tactical intelligence, which implies inter alia penetrating and intercepting organized criminal syndicates. And Chair, those are some of the paragraphs that I want to draw to your attention, and we will deal with some of it in further argument, but those are the correlations. I'm going to put those paragraphs into the columns that isn't there and then forward it on to Shepherd to forward that on. Chair, that takes me to, we can either deal with the judgment part of the IGI. I mean, chair's hands if you want to sit till five and we can deal with the judgment part of it.
We'll push, let's assess at 5:30 how much you can.
Because I want to finish it in one go, and that's why I'm asking whether I should do it. But maybe I should just start.
Yep, let's see how far you go.
Chip, go to the judgment of paragraph 112. And this is the third report relied upon by the public protector, which is the report which originated from the Office of the IGI of Intelligence. It is a report that was issued on 31 October 2014. And it is in respect of this report that the public protector had stated in her report at paragraph 5.2.26, which you'll see from the repeated, that she was reliably informed. The quote comes from 5.2.26 of the report, that it was in the custody of the former Minister of State Security, Mr. Pua Letsatsi Duba, from whom she tried to get a classified copy of the report without success. She also states that she had requested the President's assistance in making available the declassified report by the Minister of State Security. And here, the public protector relies on this report despite explicitly stating that she had not seen the report. This was the issue that Advocate Mpofu had canvassed at great length with the public protector, and we will deal with it in questions. But I just want to take you through the argument and the judgment. She relies on it because she has it on good authority that it was found in that report. And what she has on good authority that it was found in that report was that the SARS had created a COVID unit utilizing COVID and intrusive methods, which was not in line with the SARS mandate and in violation of Section 209 of the Constitution, which empowers only the President to establish any intelligence service, and that the establishment of an intelligence capacity within SARS, a capability exclusive only to legislated intelligence service, was illegal. Now, we know now that that's direct, comes directly from the IGI report. Paragraph 14, it says the public protector further recites the remedial action proposed by the OIGI in its report, namely that criminal charges be investigated against Mr. Gordhan, Mr. Pillay, Mr. Van Lachenberg. So he is an implicated party because the remedy is there, and a certain Mr. Richa for the establishment and involvement in the intelligence unit in SARS. You will recall that the argument was he only became relevant in the second half of the charges, that in the second half of the complaint that was going to be the subject matter of another report. Paragraph 15115, right? Despite the fact that the public protector, according to the report, has never seen or verified the contents and findings of the OGI report, she ordered the Minister of State Security to implement within 90 days of the issuing of the report and acting in line with the Intelligence Services Amendment Act, the OIGI report dated 31 October 2014 in its totality. Right? And the Minister of State Security was further ordered to ensure within 30 days that all intelligence equipment utilized by the unit is returned, audited, and placed into custody of the State Security Agency. Finally, the Minister of State Security was ordered to, within 14 days of the issuing of the report, to avail a declassified copy of the OIG report to the officers of the public protector. This is the remedial action in 8.3.1 to 8.3.3 of the report. The court then says the public protector further makes her findings in respect of the OIG report, ostensibly in terms of the powers vested in her by section 181, 2 and 3 of the Constitution. It is difficult to understand on what basis these sections of the Constitution can notionally grant the public protector the power to rely on a report that she herself has not seen, because this is what she says in the report. Although the public protector undoubtedly has wide investigative powers, it does not follow that she can blindly rely on evidence and facts that she is unable to verify independently, but only became aware of on good authority. As was said by the Supreme Court of Appeal in Public Protector v. Mail and Guardian, the public protector must not only discover the truth, but must also inspire confidence of the truth. So the committee is very familiar with this paragraph, so I'm not going to read out of the whole paragraph. So let's go to 117. Had the public protector, however, applied a mind to the OIG report before and not relied on good authority, she would have appreciated the shortcomings of the OIG report. And in turn would not have issued the impugned remedial action. Had she applied the mind, she would have realized two important aspects. The Inspector General acted ultra vires in investigating SARS officials and activities, and Mr. Pillar and Mr. Godin were not afforded a hearing as the auri alterum partem principle was not adhered to before coming to her findings. Now, we know, Chair, that apart from the affidavits before court, there were also heads of argument and oral submissions before the court. Now, I can't put before the committee what oral submissions were made other than what is recorded in the judgment, which we're going to come to in a moment. But I just want to take you. There were three sets of heads of argument filed in this matter. And they are, Shepo, if you go to bundle E7, 10, all right, go to page 10. Use the PDF versions. Right. So what I'm taking you to is reflected in the second supplementary heads of argument. So maybe just go to the bookmark so that the committee can see. There's the PP's heads of argument. Is the first supplementary set, and there's a second supplementary set. So what we're in now is actually the under the heading, let's just see where right, paragraph 37. Ta-da. Sorry, now go to click on the second supplementary hit and go to paragraph 37. And it says there that the fifth respondent misapprehends the powers of the public protector by suggesting that there was anything wrong with how she obtained the IGI report. In fact, as demonstrated, by the EFF, the IGI report was sufficiently alarming to the general public for its uncontested contents of the existence of the SARS unit with intelligence gathering powers that it utilized to bug the NPA and DSO. The public protector on good authority became aware of the IGI report, which was left at the offices by unknown persons. When the report came to her attention, she took steps to ensure that she could lawfully utilize it for investigation. She sought the declassification of the IGI report The minister was not cooperative on that score, erecting unnecessary obstructions to the performance of her duties, in contravention of the constitutional duty in section 181, 2, 3 of the Constitution. The submission that the public protector failed to uphold the Constitution by not disclosing the source of her access to the IGI report is a deeply flawed criticism that belies the true constitutional position. Right? Now, that was the argument before the court in that regard on the IGI report. Go back to the judgment. Right. At paragraph 118, most alarmingly, however, and despite the fact that the public protector stated in the report that she did not have sight of the OIG report before coming to her findings, counsel, acting on behalf of the public protector, asserts in the third set of heads of argument that this investigation the public protector made an independent assessment of the legal and factual questions involved in the investigation on the SARS intelligence unit and made their own conclusions. The investigation included assessing the OIG report for its factual and legal conclusions. Having carefully studied the OIG report, conducted their own independent investigation on the issues covered in that report, she concluded that the findings and the recommendations in the OIG report be implemented. In other words, she did an investigation of Pele van Lochenberg or Dunn and concluded that the findings and the recommendations in the OIG report that they be criminal, that they be recommended that they be criminal action taken against them. That criminal charges be investigated against him, right? When she issued the remedial action on the OIG report, she was satisfied that the OIG had acted within its powers in conducting the investigation and was correct in its factual and legal conclusions. And then that was in the third set of heads of argument. Then it said during argument, go back to the judgment, when counsel for the public protector was confronted with the contradictory statements in the heads of argument, the debate regarding the OIGI report took a bizarre turn. Counsel on behalf of the public protector now conceded that despite the explicit statement in the report that she had not had sight of the OIG report in preparing the report, she had in fact had the OIG report in a position when she drafted the report. The public protector now claims that she subsequently received the OIG report from an anonymous source who left it at her offices. And if you go, we know that the public protector had the OIG report from early January. And so if you go to the heads of argument, just go to the heads of argument again. You see in paragraph 7 of the first sets of heads of argument, just click on your bookmark and you go up. Now, down the 26 June 1. And you go to paragraph 7. We will see that the public protector says, go down. the public protector started engaging with the SARS Acting Commissioner Mark King and by addressing a comprehensive inquiry dated 3 December 2018. She addressed further inquiries to the Office of the Inspector General in a letter dated 14 January 2019. Right? And when that letter went off, she had already had the OIG report. The Office of the Inspector General immediately responded in a letter dated 15 January 2019, confirming having conducted an investigation into media allegations against the Special Operations Unit, SOU, and or other branches of the State Security Agency in 2014. The Inspector General also confirmed the existence of a report on the investigation by declining to give it to the Public Protector. As a consequence of the Inspector General's position on the the Public Protector issued a subpoena on 18 January 2019 against the Minister of State Security for the production of the report. In fact, it was issued against both the Minister and the IGI. The Inspector General subsequently undertook to submit the report to the Public Protector after consultation with the Minister of State Security. The Public Protector subsequently received the report of the Inspector General of Intelligence through an anonymous source who left it at the offices. The chronology in the heads are not entirely accurate. Given that the report had been obtained with its classification of top secret, there was a dispute over whether she could lawfully rely on it. The applicant makes a meal of this in his complaint against the Public Protector, although this must be water under the bridge. The Minister of Safety and Security subsequently agreed to give the Public Protector a declassified version of the IGI report with redactions of sensitive information on it. There was some disagreement on the scope of the redactions with the consequence that the State Security Minister launched legal proceedings against the disclosure of the IGI report. At the time of drafting these submissions, there were two irreconcilable positions that had occurred. Paragraph 8, it says, while awaiting judgment on whether the IGI report could lawfully be declassified and published, the Minister conceded an application to review and set aside the classified IGI report, whose disclosure she had contested in court and for which a judgment was outstanding. These events do not necessarily impact on the review application. And this is an important part, Chair, because it's an important legal principle that is absolutely correct. And I don't think it will be in dispute, but it's an important legal principle because it underscores the CR 17 matter and the Gurdan matter. These events do not necessarily impact on the review application, which must be decided on the basis of information that was before the Public Protector and in the review record. And it has relevance for when we argue as to how that impacts on the minority judgments when the erstwhile Chief Justice Mogoeng decides to consider the appeal from a review with reference to information that arises after the decision and not based on what was before the Public Protector at the time. Right? So I'm just pointing that out, that appears to be a common cause legal principle adopted. This means that the fact that the Minister has conceded an application by Mr. Lochenberg to review and set aside the IGI report does not bar this court from evaluating the merits of the review application on the basis of all the information that was before the Public Protector, including the IGI report. To the extent necessary, the status of the IGI report in these review proceedings will be addressed in supplementary heads of argument, depending on the position of the applicants to its relevance to evaluating the validity of the Public Protector's report. And then let's go back to the judgment. Right. So we know that the Public Protector had claimed that she subsequently received the OIG report from an anonymous source who left it at offices. The turn of events is disturbing to say the least, and it is difficult to label the Public Protector's conduct in this regard as anything else but dishonest. In her heads of argument, the Public Protector criticized Mr. Gurdan for making a meal of this in his complaint against the Public Protector, and that it was water under the bridge as the Minister of State Security subsequently agreed to give the public protector a declassified version of the OIG report with redactions of sensitive information on it. The argument, unfortunately, does not cure the blatantly misleading statement made by the public protector in the report. Comments made by the court in SARB versus public protector and others cannot be emphasized. And then it quotes a paragraph that we will come to in the SARS judgment when we deal with the CX matter. Go down. We won't necessarily go there. Maybe we should. However, there is no getting away from the fact that the public protector is the constitutionally appointed custodian of legality and due process in the public administration. She risks the charge of hypocrisy and incompetence if she does not hold herself to an equal or higher standard than that to which she holds other subjects, those subject to her writ. A dismissive and procedurally unfair approach by the public protector to important matters placed before her by prominent role players in the affairs of state will tarnish her reputation and damage the legitimacy of the office. She would do well to reflect more deeply on her conduct of this investigation and the criticism of her by the Governor of the Reserve Bank and the Speaker of Parliament. Statements such as this made by the public protector in an answering affidavit and heads of argument only serve to tarnish her reputation and damage the legitimacy of the office that she holds. Those who are and have been the subject of an investigation by the public protector, as well as the public at large, must have faith in the integrity of the office of the public protector and its incumbent. After all, the public protector is regarded as one of the most invaluable gifts to our nation in the fight against corruption, unlawful enrichment, prejudice and impropriety, state affairs, and for the betterment of good governance. And then it goes to dealing with Mr. Van Lochenberg having setting aside the report, and it says, any reliance thereon is apart from the fact that the public protector's reliance thereon has, in any event, been highly irregular. Now, moot, as the IOGI report is incapable of being implemented, counsel on behalf of the public protector in a last desperate attempt submitted that the reliance on the OIGI report cannot be criticized, as the OIGI report had not been reviewed at the time. Her own ambivalence regarding the OIG report discussed above totally discredits her own report. There is no merit to the submission. To add insult to injury, the public protector's failure the public protector never provided the OIG report to Minister Kudan and Mr. Pillay to respond to during the public protector's investigation. The procedural unfairness of the process that led to the report is dealt with more fully elsewhere in the judgment. But probably the most egregious is the public protector's failure to consider the extensive body of evidence that Mr. Pillay provided to the public protector. And then he goes on to that. Jane, I just want to take you to one further reference in the heads to complete it. If you go to PDF page 140. Now go to the heads, the bundle E document we were there. Right. You will see go down to paragraph 31. Hold on, go up. Actually go to 30, it will make more sense. Minister of Safety and Security had recently filed an affidavit when she alleges that the public protector's remedial action against her are incompetent in law for the simple reason that they are incapable of being implemented. The erstwhile IG acted ultra vires. She further alleges that the IGI report had been set aside by a court of law in an application that was launched by Mr. Van Lochenberg. The IGI report was set aside by way of a consent order between the parties in proceedings with the public protector to the knowledge of the minister as a direct and substantial interest in the matter was not joined as a necessary party. A consent order had the effect of rendering the remedial action of the public protector moot and unimplementable in circumstances where it has not been set aside in proceedings if the public protector was involved. So in the heads of argument, it is conceded that the order rendered the remedial action moot and unimplementable. The public protector, in the next paragraph, it states he's considering launching an application to have the order setting aside, the IGI report set aside, and in the event that she does so, will seek postponement of this application. That never happened yet. And then just go to paragraph 38. I think we've dealt with it already. Yeah. Gee, so those are the submissions on that aspect of dealing with at least three or four of the aspects that deals with bias in the judgment of that. There are one or two aspects that we want to deal with in relation to the equipment, and one other aspect, if this is a convenient time for us to adjourn, because I'm not quite ready with the to put it up on the screen. It's like a last lesson on a Friday afternoon, G. During Ramadan. I'm reminded.
Well, whatever I was going to say, once you mentioned that, I respect that you have this energy. So I will not go beyond that. You just pushed me back and said that. Thank you, Advocate Bauer. Yes, it's a Friday, just towards five, but I think we have to be grateful to the members for their commitment to stay on their work, regardless of circumstances and the days. It therefore does look like we'll pause there for the day. Perhaps also to indicate to members, the approach now is that we, and hopefully we'll be able to do that, Advocate Bauer, that we can resume to kind of try and finish up and complete this. I would prefer we do that in a day and a half, we're done with it. I think that resuming, therefore, so that we allow members to be able to do other things on Monday is the end of their constituency week, which they have not necessarily been effectively doing because of the work that we've been doing. Well, maybe we should resume on Tuesday and finish up on that. And as part of that, members, just to indicate that we working very hard for the finality of the decision to get us closer to the resumption of the inquiry. Maybe we can also use that Tuesday to indicate where we are at that point. If we're not able to announce the finality, then we'll indicate a process towards that. But as you leave, I think it's important that you start putting this in your mind as part of budgeting your time, because we would not be issuing a revised program pending us finalizing that. So Tembukosi is not able to do that because we have to make sure that when we send that out, it is the kind of program that takes us to the end. And it's a realistic program in terms of it not having any other off-ramps, but also to take into account in your planning, even though we'll put that firmly in detail when we do so, you know that we have at this stage 4 days left for completing that testimony with the legal team of the PP. We would have another 6 or so days with the evidence leaders. We would have about a day or so, 2 days for, or 3 days for the members, depending on how much time members would need, and a day or so for the re-examination, issues of closing arguments that would need to be there, which can take us to about 3 days or so. And then we're also factoring that into allowing some time for the written arguments. Anything between 6 to 10 days to do that. You are aware that there's always a standing item of the Audi that will provide once we have a draft report of about 10 days at this stage. I'm just giving you a sense that when we come back, when we resume, when we get to that finality, the program will take those things into account towards the conclusion. But I don't want now for us to get to that point. We're working very hard, even if it means at some point pushing those role players and assisting them here and there and so on. But I'm very confident that we, in the manner we are pushing, we will get to the point that we need to get to with our work that you so diligently did. So on that, colleagues, perhaps that's a point where we pause and adjourn our meeting for today until we meet on Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.